Hey, Mike.
Michelle.
Mike.
I beg of you, leave me alone.
I'd like to begin by asking you a few questions about how this whole mess got started. Do you remember seeing him for the first time?
Yeah. You guys here on vacation?
Certainly are.
Welcome to the end of the world.
And it grows, and it grows, and it feeds me like it's never fed me before.
How sincere was that?
Michelle, moms take a beating in this one.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if I looked at it quite like that, but yeah, I could definitely agree with that statement.
All right, Michelle, I got more gravestone math. I'm stuck on this in my head. I cannot get over it.
Okay.
Gravestones we saw at the end of the last episode.
Yeah.
Last one, right? It was the last one?
It was the last one, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Joni is 38 years old. Cole died in 2053 because it's on his freaking gravestone.
Right.
For anyone to see a gravestone in 2053 or later, which has to be true because she's looking at the gravestone, and we know she's 38, that means she would have had to be born in 2015 or later than 2015. But she wasn't because we know she was 7 years old or about that in 2015.
Right.
So something's not right with the gravestone math again.
And why would they do that unless it has a significance? Well, but, you know, they did the exact same thing with Gabriel. They had the baby Gabriel, not the dad Gabriel. They had two different dates on the gravestone. So it's funny if it's an error that they've done it again. On Twitter, I put up a picture. It was whenever it was, years ago, seasons ago, of the two different gravestones, like 5 years apart.
I know. You're committed, Michelle. You went all the way out to Montauk and took a picture.
I know. But that was before it was flooded, so, you know.
That was what my question was to you. Are they making mistakes, or are they doing this to tweak us on purpose?
Well, right, to say, are you paying attention? Because if you had been paying attention, like the last episode could show all the flaws that they did, like to lead us up to the fact that none of this is real, that all of this is a book and it was edited at some point. Okay, at this point we had to go back and edit this because the timeline wasn't working or because we wanted to put something else in or whatever.
God, I hope they don't do that.
I don't know. I think that would be more brilliant than it just being a mistake. How can you make a mistake like that? I understand they want to be in the future, but you can't make a mistake like that.
Maybe Sarah Treem, when she listens to our podcast a couple times a week, she'll write this into her story to get herself off the hook.
Maybe. Maybe, Sarah, we love it, and we'd really like to see this come to fruition in place of it being an error. Because if this is an error on both of those, then that's not good. That's like, I mean, how bad can it be?
Or if it just goes unexplained, like, whoops, no further details available.
Well, if it goes unexplained, then it has to be an error. It's either an error in storytelling or an error in the set.
Gravestone,
right?
Carving.
Yeah. And I mean, it just can't be. They can't do that. It's like everybody else says. I went back and I was reading some stuff on Twitter before about how much people liked this show. In season one, people were really into it. And unfortunately, they've lost a whole lot of viewers because of the ridiculousness. So my hope is that they somehow round this out and show us that it was deliberate. Because then this could be like a great go down in history kind of Sixth Sense, we tricked you at the last minute, mind-blowing kind of thing, if they play it right.
Michelle, are you on the Sarah Treem payroll now? Mind-blowing
we'll
drama? I hardly think it can recover to be that, but.
Well, but think about it, Mike. What if they tie up every loose end, or at least 80% of them, right? And it's something totally unexpected. Then this could be like, wow.
Okay.
But what did you think about Sierra's perspective? Were you glad to get that?
The whole damn thing. Why do we care about Sierra? Now is another new character. Do we even care about Sierra? It's another viewpoint into motherhood and mistakes, mother, and how hard it is to be a mother. I don't get it. I don't get it. What, make Joni's motherhood. Show Joni's struggle. Show somebody we freaking care about a little.
Yeah. Although I think we're going to get like a eye full of Joni pretty soon. My take is we're going to get like an episode full of Joni coming up, just based on the stuff that happened, and particularly since they didn't show her at all this time. I'm thinking we may get more of her, but that's just my thought on it.
We get a ton of passive aggressiveness too in this episode.
On the mother thing, just real quick, maybe they're showing Sierra and the motherhood struggle, although that was horrendous, and anyway, we'll get to it. But to show how strong Helen actually is.
Because we picture. She is.
I know, but you know how they kind of beat us over the head with stuff, right? And it's like a reiteration to me. As I'm seeing Sierra struggle with this when she is 30, and we go back and we think about Helen, who was much younger when she started having kids, and she had 4, whereas Sierra has just the 1. Now, granted, she had a husband, which is completely different as far as raising children go, but Helen just looks more and more like a rock star as things go on.
They have another theme in this one about Helen. Helen is kind, and Sasha's making her unkind.
Absolutely.
Helen's always trying to find the kind answer for people.
I was curious as to your take on that, because I know you and I differ a little bit on that. What did you think about it?
About Helen being kind or the motherhood thing?
About Helen being kind.
Yeah, I think she's kind. I think she tries to find her first inclination is kindness and helpfulness. And Sasha is trying to instill in her now, doesn't it feel good to put your foot down? And, you know, doesn't it feel good to assert your power of keeping your space, and your time is valuable. You can't just give it away to people.
Well, the other shoe certainly dropped on Sasha this time. So you were right about Sasha, and it was unsettling to me to see it playing out in Helen's life, although I think we had to see that to get where we're going to eventually go, which I'm thinking is, like you think, maybe the East Coast. So what was passive-aggressive? I'm sorry, I went back to
another. Sierra and her mom are totally passive-aggressive to one another. And then Priya's totally passive-aggressive to Helen. And maybe Sasha, I can't remember what Sasha does, but passive-aggressiveness all over the place.
Yeah, I agree.
Like Sierra with Helen. Okay, Supermom, I'll just go. It's okay. It's like she really says, fuck you, I really needed you to help me. Can I have your vape pen?
Right.
She's such a helpless little waif.
Yeah, according to Helen, again.
Well, she is.
Well, yeah, I guess according to herself, too. But to see her just see this struggle, and all the new moms, all the moms out there, the first babies, while we don't, hopefully none of us have her flaws and do the things she did, which are beyond disgusting. I mean, it's terrible. But it's hard. It is so hard. And it changes, like, who you are as a person. And it kind of takes you down this road that you have to go down because this baby's there. And sometimes I think some of us go down it like kicking and screaming, particularly, or maybe not particularly, but in my instance, I was young. I was 21 when I had my first daughter, and it was a difficult transition from everything being essentially about me to everything being essentially not about me. And so it is hard. And I think a lot of us moms who watch that could really sympathize with that and with that struggle. Although, even by her own account, the things she did were just, I mean, it was shocking. I was shocked.
Michelle, did you have a dumb candle ceremony like Sierra does?
Her little meditation thing?
Yeah, when you had your first baby, were you lighting candles and ignoring the kid while she was screaming?
I did not do that. But
I had to turn the sound down on that goddamn baby that was screeching to my... I could not listen to that.
That was... At times, when you have a baby, that was very realistic. And it wasn't even as bad as it gets in real life sometimes. That was not overplayed, I don't think, at all. So that little baby, I think, is going to win, you know, like an Oscar for this.
Not at all. Not Sierra putting eye makeup on while she's still bouncing.
Oh, that's just stupid.
That wasn't overplayed at all.
That was stupid, obviously, but the baby's cry and how, yes, that was not, that was, they do that sometimes. Some babies do.
All right, Michelle, well, I have no special sound effects for you of baby screaming, so.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's the one part.
That baby crying was worse than Noah singing Tom Petty.
Yeah, it was bad. It was bad, and it's nerve-wracking to listen to that. It's very difficult, and it's difficult even when it's your own baby. I mean, surely you've been out at a restaurant or something, in a grocery store or something, and heard that.
Not continuously like that, though. People take that kid away.
Okay.
I can play Noah again if you want.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I'm kidding.
No,
I don't have
okay.
it queued up.
Okay. So we start off with Sierra, and she's doing this meditation. And Sierra's frazzled, right? Even at the beginning of this. And, of course, Eddie starts to cry in the middle of it. It completely stresses her out. And she's whispering, please stop crying. Please just go back to sleep. And I think a lot of us as moms can sympathize. I had a daughter who did not sleep, and I can but I mean, this was during the day that she was doing this, but in the morning, presumably. But those of us who had kids that didn't sleep, you're just like, please, please.
Let me
sleep.
Guess which one, Michelle.
Guess which one?
The middle one.
The middle one.
Yep.
My redhead. Yep. She did not sleep, and people don't believe that, and it is absolutely the truth. She slept 6 hours out of 24, roughly, from the time she was born until the time she was almost 3. And it was in 2-hour stretches, about 6 or 7 hours apart. And that's how she slept. She did not sleep. So it was nightmarish for a long time with her sleep thing. And I can remember the police stop crying, please, just sleep. Just,
the police
I just want,
were crying?
No, please, please stop crying. But she goes to pick him up, and she's rocking him, and she's loving on him. And you think, okay, she's struggling, but she's really this good, nurturing mom. And then you're right. She puts on this mascara as she bounces him, and that was ridiculous. And
wait a minute. Did you just call her a good, nurturing mom?
No, I said that's what... Well, yes, I said that's what it seemed like at the beginning. It seemed like she was super stressed, but she still went to him, and she's picking him up, and she's rocking him. She's even reasoning with him, right? She's telling him she has an audition. She talks to him.
All right, Michelle, I don't have kids. I've never had kids. And I did not get that she was a good nurturing mom. I got that she was annoyed and stressed, and she was trying to figure out how to get it to stop. And that's her primary thing, is not comforting Eddie, but to get it to stop, or to put distance between herself and this stress that this baby's causing her.
Well, I don't disagree with you, but I don't think those have to be mutually exclusive. I think that just the way she was going about trying to get it to stop was a more nurturing way than like walking outside while he's screaming.
But she does that later. She gets her distance from it. Instead of comforting the baby, she puts distance. And she would have done that here if she could. She just had no other choice but to pick him up and jiggle him a little bit. And she's worried about her makeup. I don't know. I never saw Sierra as a nurturing. I'm sure instinct is there. You can't ever get away from that as a mother, that you have to like obey nature's laws. But somehow you baby cry, mommy respond is in effect. But I don't know. I don't see her as a very good nurturing mom.
Well, I don't see her that way as the episode unfolds. But I thought at the beginning that was what we were going for.
Okay.
Because she could have done things then. She could have done things. She could have walked outside and closed the door and let him cry. He was safe in his crib. She could have turned up the music really loud and continued what she's doing. She could have put earphones on or in or something. She could have done something different. But she didn't. She went to him. And I tried to give her the benefit of the doubt as far as...
She could have shotgunned her vape pen some pot into his face to get him...
Let's hope not. But,
sorry, didn't mean to distract you.
No, that was... And it's interesting to hear your perspective. It really is, because I did see her as really struggling, but really trying. The conversations she has with him during this whole episode are funny and they're interesting to me. And I wish I could still give her the benefit of the doubt, but of course that is not possible at all.
No, her conversation to me, my perspective, her mantras, her conversations to Eddie are not conversations. Those are mantras to herself to settle her nerves, and they're her groovy hippie chick ways of finding comfort for herself.
Yes,
chanting,
the mantra work,
talking to Eddie is not communication to Eddie or trying to make him feel soothed. It's for herself. It's selfish.
But new moms sometimes don't know what else to do.
Well, of course.
It's like a finding your way, I think. And I think that just like, okay, she spent probably what'll be a third of her life just with her. And now she has this little helpless being that depends on her for literally everything, her alone, 24 hours a day. And you have to find your groove with that. And you have to find your way to deal. And I think it's okay to... Well, I mean, who cares what I even think? But I think it's maybe normal to have those kind of conversations. She's never had the other kind of conversations with anybody because you don't until you have your own baby. So the talking to them, I get. Now, Eddie, mommy's going on an audition, and it's really important. And, I mean, she is. You're right. It's for her. But what else can she do in that situation?
I don't know. Sing a little baby song. Something that's Eddie-centric, not whatever her name is, Sienna-centric.
Sierra. Sorry. You're as bad as Leaf. Yeah.
Leaf.
But but even the guard asked if the baby's okay. And I don't
Leaf
think
Leaf Devlin, stud director. What a name. Yeah. Leaf Devlin. Hi, Leaf Devlin. How are you?
Well, it's a name, right? People are named Leaf, right? I think I know somebody who's going to name their baby.
I'm not picking on Leaf. I'm picking on the Leaf Devlin.
Oh.
Like Dash Riprock. Hi, Dash Riprock here. But Leaf Jones.
Who?
Less dashing. Oh. Leaf Jones. Leaf Smith. Leaf blower.
A leaf, okay, that would have been funny. Okay, so But she gets there and she pulls in and she starts to go in for this audition and she goes back to get the baby and he is asleep. He has suddenly fallen asleep with no tears on his face and no red faced and no stuffed up nose, which is completely unrealistic after that
scream. Because of the driving. Driving mystically puts babies to sleep, Michelle.
It does. It does. But they still have, they look like they've been crying, right? Like they sit there and they go, even in their sleep, they're doing that, you know, and they've got like the tear-strained face and the red face and they can't breathe through their nose, which of course wakes them back up. But
somehow, God, growing up at your house must have been torture, Michelle. But I thought that nosy guard was going to catch her. He kept coming and going. Everything all right, ma'am? He's like poking his nose into her window.
Well, she likes his hat. But what about her leaving that baby in the car?
Yeah, an eagle could have swooped in and grabbed that kid.
No, come on. That is horrible.
Well, she let the window halfway down.
Is that better or worse?
And you can't leave the kid in the car at all. There's no better or worse.
No, I'm just saying.
I mean, and you're right. I love your hat. Like, nice way to get off the hook, Sienna.
Yeah, it just shows her level of, I'm not here. I can't even think of things to say.
It shows her level of zero game. She has zero intelligence. She's not clever. She's not creative. She's always a victim. She's the neediest person ever. I mean, I still don't see why she's got her own part in this, her own scene in this series.
Yeah, I don't either. Unless they were showing us just like the motherhood thing, like I said, I don't get it. But she left that baby in the car, and I'm just like blown away. Okay, yeah, you're right, the window was down, but the window was down. That means anybody could have just gotten that baby out of the car.
Or more likely, anyone could have just, if the kid starts crying again, just seen or heard the kid and then gotten Sienna in trouble. I'm going to call her Sienna to make fun of her. Gotten her in trouble for, she was on the brink of being in trouble and wiggled off the hook a few times on this one. But that was clearly one time, like, the kid just cries again. The kid's a crier, you know?
Yeah, he has colic.
Somebody hears it, looks in, there's a guard already snooping around suspiciously. Why do they have that guard smoking gun and not pull the trigger? The Chekhov guard, he never caught her at anything.
Just her perspective to show that she feels judged. I mean, look at the way he was looking at her. It's like, is that kid okay? When she first pulls in, and then later on, it's like, are you okay? It's just like she feels judged, I think, by everything that's going on. But her leaving that baby in that car just... that just messes me up. But she goes in, and she's doing her piece, and Leaf cuts her off, dismisses her, calls her Sienna. She looks stressed, and she walks back out to the car like as if she remembered, oh, I left my baby in the car. And then she started looking like, and I am going to heavily in this whole episode give my take on these people's looks and the way that they behaved. I mean, I felt like it was like beating me over the head with it. So she looked like to me that she remembered her baby. And then she's like, that wasn't worth it. I went in there. I didn't get the part, which is what she's thinking. He didn't like me. And I gave up my baby's safety, my potential for going to jail, leaving this baby in the car, which she absolutely should, leaving the baby in the car.
I think it's just a small fine.
Yeah, they'd take that baby, I would think. But she runs to him, and he is crying. He's awake, and she's apologizing. She almost collapses right outside the car, and this is where the guard comes up again, that she likes his hat, and you know, everything is like this scene to her. You know, I'm just running a rough scene. Thank you. I like your hat.
She's pounding her head on the car.
And what about her mom? Can we talk about her mom?
She pounds her head a few times on different things in this one. Three times.
She does. Yeah.
Yeah, her mom is Jennifer Jason Leigh, Michelle. Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Isn't that great?
She was one of the sweetest girls in that movie. When all the other people were mean to each other and trying to, like, screw each other and take advantage of each other.
Right.
She got taken advantage of in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And she was the sweetest, most innocent 18-year-old. And I didn't know it was her until I saw later in the credits. It was hard to pick her visually out. But once I knew it was her, you could tell by her voice that it's the Jennifer Jason Leigh voice, even at 55 or however old she is.
And the mouth expressions and stuff. Yeah, the facial expressions. I didn't know who it was either, but I knew it was somebody. And so I looked her up before it went off because I had to know. So, and it's funny how Leaf was talking about her later on and how much he liked her because she was kind of a heartthrob or whatever.
Totally. Back in the day. 78 or 81 or whatever.
But so her mom calls her as she's driving back home, and it's been a rough morning, right? Her meditation's been interrupted. She's committed arguably a felony. She didn't get the part. The director doesn't even know her name, can't even get her name right. Okay, we also find out that no time has passed. Remember last time we said, okay, a few more months have passed. It's probably about 6 months since Vic has died. And that's not true. No more time has passed because we find out Eddie is 4 months and a week. So there's been no time passed. And her mom hasn't seen him yet because she's been in Nepal, but she's in town and wants to come over tonight. And they may...
Well, wait, didn't Vic die on the day of Eddie's birth?
Yes.
So 4 months have passed.
Right, exactly. 4 months and a week. Exactly. So, but we thought it was longer because, so this fling with Sasha has happened really quick. It has not been going on for a long time.
Yeah, like they're painting this picture really clear. I said this to Jeannie. We do the Succession podcast for the show Succession. And sometimes it's mysterious, like, what's going on? What does this scene mean? What is this character trying to do? If you follow the money, I said to Jeannie, if you just follow the money, it always tells you the truth. And if you follow the Sarah Treen money in this, Michelle, it'll tell you the truth. She's showing Helen swimming herself through the sea of men. Like, first it's Vic, then it's Sasha. And like, she's going to go back to Noah. Follow the theme of it. It's like men, she sees men, they're all cool boyfriends on the first glance, and then they have cracks in their facade. I mean, Vic had an affair. Sasha's appearing to have cracks in his facade now. It's a theme that Helen is experiencing from these writers.
I think that's real life, right? That is how it goes. You meet somebody and you only see the good stuff in them, and then I guess it depends on how in love with them you fall, how much you will look over.
Well, like you said, the time, it's exaggerated by the time. It's only 4 months since Vic died. I mean, Noah's still on the periphery of her consideration if you don't think she's going to love him again. He is at least around her. So Vic's come and gone. Now Sasha's about to be gone. He's come and gone. And it's like she's swimming herself through this sea of men. I'm calling a couple guys a sea, but you get my point.
Sure.
She's experiencing relationships superficially, and she's not really learning from it. And it has only been 4 months. Do you date anyone? Do you call anyone a boyfriend 4 months after your significant other dies of cancer?
Yeah, I mean, I cannot even imagine. I mean, God forbid, but I cannot imagine even being decompressed from that year of torture that she went through with Vic, much less being this involved with somebody else at this point.
Yeah, you got to wear white for a year, be in mourning.
Yeah, white's not my color either, Mike. I don't know. But
you are wrong, Michelle. You look lovely in white. More passive aggressive.
Okay. But I dislike that because, like I said, we thought last time that more time had passed because Stacy comes in and she's like, it's Halloween and, you know, all this kind of stuff in the last episode. So I figured they were saying that to make it appear as if time had passed. But because we didn't know, as far as I can figure out, the date that Vic actually died.
No, that's one thing Sarah Treem's not making mistakes on, is she's time stamping it pretty clearly.
But is it clear? Because we really, I mean, how did, okay.
Well, the gravestones are whatever they are, but this is pretty clear.
I'm sorry.
We have the marker of Vic's death as Eddie's birth, and we know Eddie's 4.5 months, so you can't mess that up. You can't interpret that many different ways.
But how does that go along with the fact that last episode, Sasha was asking her to buy him some furniture? Real cutesy little sex scene of, you know, you get me a lamp, can I have a rug? And so she wasn't doing anything. She wasn't doing anything. And she was telling him she couldn't. She had too much going on. To in this episode, she has already finished a client's house that he has gotten her. And still, only 4 months and a week have passed since Vic died.
I don't see any conflict there. She meets Sasha 4 months ago or 2 months ago, whatever. She starts to like him. He teases her about, because he kind of knows she's a decorator slash whatever the hell she is with furniture. And so he teases her. That's his entree to her. And then she could do that woman's house in 2 weeks. You know, it doesn't take long.
I guess. I mean, she met him. Vic had been dead, I think they told us, a little bit over 3 months when she met Sasha and he was filming the movie. So that would mean that in 5 weeks, she has fallen in love with him, started this relationship. They're telling each other they love each other. She's already completed a project. She has an assistant. I mean, a lot of stuff. And I mean, I guess that can happen in 5 weeks. You're right. But it just seems like a lot. So I guess I'm rationalizing it to give us a pass on why we thought more time had passed last time.
No, I don't. I mean, 5 weeks or 4 months are the same to me. It should be like two. Is it 2 years or is it one? You know, it's not like a big difference.
Okay. Well, her mom says she's going to be there at 6, and they point that out. They make that a point. And she's also really ugly. Are you going to be home? Well, of course you're going to be home. What else would you do? It's just, okay. So Sierra's at home, and she's trying to tidy up for her mom. And you can tell she's, like, holding the baby in the baby carrier and vacuuming at the same time. And her mom comes up and they make a point to show us that she's a full hour early, as if to kind of catch Sasha or Sierra unprepared. And her mom is a character, to say the least. I mean, you're right. You're right about the passive aggressiveness. She comes in and says, oh, I love the house. It looks so lived in.
I don't like my memories of Jennifer Jason Leigh being tarnished by this, because I view her as Stacy the cute girl in Fast Times.
Well, a lot's happened since then, Mike. She's lived a lot of life, so. But I'm so glad I wrestled this house away from your father so you could have it because of me, because of what I did.
You know, Michelle, now that you say this about the 5 o'clock and 6 o'clock, I did notice that in the show. I remember it, but that's another time thing. Maybe there is something to this time being asynchronous that we're not catching. I mean, we're catching the mistakes of it, but maybe there's a meaning that we're missing.
I hope so.
Because it happens so often that there has to be something. They can't just be making these mistakes.
No, and they time all the time. We're all the time hearing about time. Like, what time is it that she goes and picks up Eddie and she needs this time to go do this stuff? And I guess life is time, but I don't know.
All right, Sarah Treem's going to have the last laugh on my ass for sure.
But her mom then tells her that Sierra's going to have a sibling. So evidently her father's gotten someone pregnant. And then her mom just like, everything is about her. She, oh, I look so old. And she like strong arms Sierra into handing her the baby, which was, that was kind of weird, wasn't it? Sierra didn't want her mom to hold her baby.
I think it was weirder that Sierra didn't want her mom to hold her, to hold him, than the mom, grandma wanting to hold him. And you call it strong arm, but she's just like, oh, she's so cute. He's so cute. I could see that. But so, yeah, Sierra not wanting to hand him over, that was pretty weird.
Well, yeah, and she's like, no, we're attachment parent. Mom's like, no, you're not. No, that's not what this is. And it was, that was kind of funny. And but she didn't have any trouble handing him over to anybody else. I mean, she hands him over to Stacy in a little while. So that shows me that she doesn't have trouble handing this baby over to people. And somebody who is that tired of holding this baby and dealing with this baby, you know, frequently you see young moms, if you have any trust in somebody, particularly if you're going to be sitting right there with them and they want to hold your baby, you're like, please, you know, please, my arms are tired and I'm here anyway, please.
And you go out like clubbing while they're not paying attention.
Yeah, I don't, that might be a little much. But so as her mom's holding him, Sierra gets a call from her agent. And Leaf said that she was a unique talent and she got the part, but they need her tomorrow and tomorrow night. So she goes back inside and her mom.
Yeah, Michelle, okay. You know, how did she get dismissed and then selected? Did this Leaf guy realize that no other daughters of the famous Jennifer Jason Leigh were going to come in? Oh, she must be the only one daughter, so I guess I'll have to pick her. Why did she get dismissed and then chosen?
I guess because he saw what he needed. He saw enough. He wanted her. But that wasn't what she took from the interaction.
Right, I guess
that
so.
She had. But she goes inside and her mom's saying that he's so easy, unlike Sierra. And it was just like this digs at her constantly, right? Because she's talked about how hard he is. He has colic. He always cries. I have to leave him in the car, which that just made me throw up a little bit saying that. But, you know, because he's so hard, I can't even wake him up. I have to put him, I mean, her mind is there. And her mom is going, oh, he's so easy, plays by himself. It's a sign of intelligence. He's not an emotional terrorist like you were. You were awful, Sierra. You were terrible. So then she asks about her agent and is even belittling with her about that, saying, I hope he's getting you an audition at least. And Sierra tells her that she got a part, and it's a big part. And her reaction to that, what did you think?
Jennifer Jason Leigh's reaction?
Yes.
Like she was jealous, almost like, ooh, you're doing better than I thought. That puts me off a little bit.
Yeah. It was like, then she was like trying to sabotage her, right? She wants to go over the scene with her, that Sierra got the part for, oh, they don't want it that way. And then she starts trying to do it for her, even though she doesn't want to do it. And every time she gets into it, her mom cuts her off.
I don't think her mom was trying to sabotage her. I think her mom was trying to one-up her. Like, you won the part, but still, I've got the 35 years of experience. I'll polish this part up for you, because you're probably not doing it right. And that there's a total passive-aggressive exchange between them. Both of them passive-aggressiving each other. But yeah, I think Jennifer Jason Leigh was just being, well, I got to put my stamp on this somehow. To one-up her more than to sabotage it.
I totally saw it as a sabotage, because then she gets mad, right, because Sierra stands up to her and says something about her dad, made her put her in school, and that's, you know, because her mom's like, how many sets have you been on? And she's like, I've been on a lot, actually, until dad made you put me in school. And she's like, oh, okay, I just wanted you with me, and I'm sorry. Oh, don't you love those apologies? I'm sorry that you feel the need to attack me. I mean, I love those kind of apologies. And then she leaves, and then Sierra calls her later to make sure she's still going to watch Eddie. And she says she is, but then we find out the next morning she's not. But she waits till the last freaking minute to let her know. She knew what that would do to her. She didn't want her to get this part.
Yeah. There's some, I told this to Jeannie too in our Succession podcast, Michelle. There's like some total similarities in these two shows. One is stupid. It's Sierra's car. Her car is the exact same car that they use in the show Succession, the Black Range Rover. But the mom promising to do something and then the next few minutes or hours bowing out and leaving the person on the hook is evident in both shows.
I have not caught up on Succession yet, but that's awful. In this situation, it's a really tight spot to put her in. And not only is she doing it to her, but she has to realize that if she does that, that Sierra's not going to be on her game when she goes in, because she's going to be frazzled even if she's able to find a babysitter.
Yeah, you might be right. I never even considered that this was part of some sabotage. Like, I'll promise, and then she'll be freaked out at the last minute when I bow out and leave her on the hook for not having a babysitter.
Yeah,
I looked at Jennifer Jason Leigh's being tarnished, and I was disappointed, and like, oh well, this is just more tarnish they're throwing out. But you might be right; it might be part of some plan she had.
Well, that's certainly how I felt about the situation. But Sierra goes next door, and she asks Helen to watch him. And Helen, I think I talked about this last week about how she says this, but Helen can't, and Sierra's like begging her, which, if somebody can't, they can't. It's not like, okay, the things in my life are more important than the things in your life, so you need to stop what you're doing to take care of my baby. I mean, that was ridiculous, but...
Well, Sierra also knows that who Helen is, and she knows she can kind of leverage Helen's goodness. Helen is a pretty good mother, so she can kind of leverage that. Like, I'll just press that button. That Helen will step up because she knows I'm, you know, that she can help me be a mother. She plays that on her.
Yeah, she does. And she maybe views Helen as kind of a pushover too. Because here she had an affair with Helen's dying husband, got pregnant, and Helen is helping her with the baby.
Yeah, she's Jon Snowing her.
But Helen tells her she's condescending in Sierra's view. And she says, you brought a child into the world. Figure it out. And that figure it out with Helen drives me crazy. I hate that.
That was kind of correct, though.
I'm not saying it's not correct. It's just cold. And I don't think Helen is that way.
So what would you have done, Michelle, if you were Helen with that question in front of you?
I mean, I would have sympathized if I knew somebody who could help her. I would have maybe put her in touch with somebody. I might would have helped her make some phone calls or something, you know, taking 10 minutes of my time and seeing what I could do if somebody's desperate in a situation like that. I wouldn't close the door on her. And then if I couldn't help, then I couldn't. But I had done something in place of telling her when she's obviously frazzled and in a bad state, figure it out, and closing the door in her face.
Okay.
But Stacy comes out. Helen closes the door on her. So Stacy comes out and says she's heard the whole conversation and she'll do it. So Sierra does not hesitate to hand this baby to a 12-year-old. But
yeah, how does Stacy get in there so quickly and Helen not know that Stacy can hear Helen and Sierra? How come Helen can't hear Stacy and Sierra? And come out and say, honey, no, I told her that she needs to figure it out. You need to get ready for school. How does this happen without Helen knowing?
Unless Stacy was just eavesdropping or something. I don't know. But this is another thing. Can we talk about this for just 1 second? Didn't we find out, and I'm harping on this, and I apologize for it, but didn't we find out last time that they had been divorced for 10 years because of the book?
I don't know. I can't remember.
I'm pretty sure. I wish you could, because I don't want to go through this rant if I'm not right. And I might be wrong.
Oh, I do it all the time, Michelle.
But I'm pretty sure that they've been separated and divorced or whatever for 10 years. And if that's true, Stacy was not 2 when they divorced.
Are you trying to undermine my gravestone math, Michelle?
I'm just saying it's another fallacy. Stacy was like 7, right?
I remember Stacy being little. I guess 2 is really little, but I can't remember how little she was. So she was at least like in second grade, you think, or toddler at least?
Yeah, I mean, Stacy's the one who got choked. So she was not a baby. She was young when he met Allison, which was before, you know, presumably a good time before they got divorced. Joni was 7 when Allison died. We know that was like a year ago, at least, right? When Allison died, because Vic had just gotten sick when Allison died. Remember, she came to their house and she spent the night and Helen talked to her and all that kind of stuff because she came to California because she was, excuse me, freaked out over Ben. And Vic was sick at that point. But she went right back and died. So Joni was 7 then. And how could Joni be 7 then, which was however long ago, right? Like over a year ago. So she's over 8. And Stacy just be 12. Because you're pregnant for 9 months. I'm sorry, are you hearing that? I'm getting notifications and it's really loud in my ear.
Yeah, I'm just scribbling notes down frantically. Okay, pregnant for 9 months. No, I'm just kind of mad now that if Sarah Treem did this all along and I was making fun of her for making these mistakes, I'm kind of mad that she outsmarted me. Because, well, yeah, you're right. Stacy was not a little runt. She was not like in a bassinet. She was the one Allison saved as a little girl. So you're right. She wasn't at the age doesn't add up.
And she was in school because we see her in school. We see her going to school with Noah still there before Noah leaves. And so she was in school at least. And so if that much time has passed, we know at least, I mean, it's beyond 8 years because at this point, Joni is 8. So it's 9 months pregnancy. Allison wasn't pregnant with her for a while. They lived together for a while. We got the whole trial thing that Noah went through and all that. Or maybe she was, but still, it's been at least 9 years. And that is conservative. I'm going to say at least 10. And I think we decided last time, for whatever purpose, that it was 10 years.
So we got to change our argument to what, to why are these times wrong, to what's the value to the story that Sarah Treem would be baking in with these times being inaccurate. Your theory is brilliant, that it's somebody redlining a script somehow. Well, no, let's change this. And then the continuity is off and they have to rewrite it. And that is brilliant. I never even thought of that. But I don't want to see a St. Elsewhere snow globe at the end of this where somebody's sitting in a movie editing room with film on the floor and it's a bunch of, or a writer's table with a whiteboard and they're moving index cards around. I don't want to see that. I don't know, maybe I do. Who knows?
But what? Yeah, that's what I was going to say. What better ending could there be? I don't know how else they can explain all of this. It's so, and I'm hopeful that they just blow me away with it. Blow me away with it, and I will admit it. If this is all error, though, this is too bad. It's too bad. There's no way. There's no way Stacy was 2. She was having conversations. There's no way. And so that timeline is thrown off.
Stacy's a pretty smart kid.
Yeah, but she wasn't going to school at 2. She wasn't like, you know, in a diaper when Helen saved her. So
Allison saved her.
Allison. You're right, Allison.
Helen was flirting with the cook. All right, Michelle.
I think you're remembering that wrong. Okay. Sierra's on set and she's in costume and she's doing the scene the way her mom told her to. She's trying to. She's doing it different. And
so, help me understand that, Michelle. What made the performance that Leif Devlin, stud director, liked more than the other one, eight other ones she did? I didn't even hardly notice a difference.
She was much more forceful in the ones her mother was telling her to.
Much more? Was it that distinct from the other times?
I thought Sierra kind of really did that well because it was enough that I even noticed. All and right. So, you know. But anyway, she decides to do it like she did it before. He's frustrated. The kid can only work for so long. And then, you know, labor laws, I guess, or whatever. And so he agrees to one more take. And she does it like she did it before when she sang her mantra beforehand, before she starts it. And everybody loves it. And I thought it was pretty ironic that this was a scene where she's a mother being mean to her daughter. And she's just had this mother being mean to her, plus she has, you know, I mean, I don't know if she's mean to her son, but she's certainly
and Margaret's mean to Helen, and Priya's mean to Helen, and mothers are mean in this one.
Mothers are mean.
Jennifer Jason's mean to Lee. You know what I mean? There's kind of a diss of motherhood here.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of this mothering thing is really hard.
Except for Helen.
She's
not mean to people.
Except for Helen.
Yeah.
Helen, except in Margaret's take, she doesn't love them anymore. Remember, that's what she told Trevor last time.
Well, that's just bullshit manipulation.
But she's out at a club after this, and she's dancing, which was an important part of this. Like, she couldn't go back and get her kid after this, that she's left with a 12-year-old. She's dancing. Leif calls her over. He's offering her some blow, confesses to her that he had a massive crush on her mom as a kid, and that's why he called her in at all. And then and she doesn't like that, you can tell, but then he just really smooths it out, and he says that she's prettier and a much better actress than her mother ever was. And this makes her so happy that she decides to partake of the drugs with him and then go have sex in that nasty bathroom.
Yeah, it's all pulling levers. He knows what'll get her, like, impress her. You're better than your mom ever was, even though she was in posters all over my room.
So you don't think he's sincere in that?
No, he's pulling levers. Somehow, I asked the stupid question, like, why did he pick her over all the other actresses that were auditioning? Right. And somehow, I think he probably found out that she was the daughter of the great Jennifer Jason Leigh, and that's why he picked her.
Okay. Well, then Sierra goes to pick up Eddie at Helen's house, who does not lock her door. She has a baby laying there on the floor, and her door's never locked. People are coming and going all the time, but anytime Noah goes up to the door, it seems to be locked, but nobody else. Helen's asleep on the couch with Eddie on the floor in his little basket, and she gives Sierra the mom look, right? She gives Sierra that look, telling her that Stacy is 12 years old and has never babysat before. And Sierra's defense is that, well, Stacy offered. And Helen's upset and says, whatever. And she goes to bed. Sierra gets Eddie, who immediately starts crying with her, even though he seems pretty fine with everybody else. And she goes outside. She has, like, this panic attack on Helen's porch. And she starts beating her head into Helen's house. You're right. She does that several times. And then she decides to drive around in this impaired state. That was so freaking over the top. And this is not somebody else's take on it, right? This is her take. She's talking to him the whole time and she's saying her mantras. And she is literally driving like a maniac. Now, was that the drugs?
I don't know, Michelle. This show sucks. Sarah Treem has one arrow in her catastrophe quiver. It's drunk driving crashes. There can't be any other emergency that wakes somebody up to, you know, the status of their life being in disarray. And of course, she can't drive around subtly and dramatically in well-edited scenes and have a minor accident. It has to be impossibly, stupidly exaggerated. She's going frickin' 70 miles an hour down whatever canyon road with curves and nighttime poor lighting.
And running stop signs, right.
And she can't, and she's looking back at Eddie for 5 seconds at a time. It can't be done intelligently. It has to be done stupidly exaggerated. It's so dumb. I don't know.
It was definitely over the top. And if you'll remember when she had Eddie in the car before, they showed us that she had like a camera on him. You don't have to look back at your babies anymore, which you never should when you're driving, obviously, but you don't have to do that. There's cameras that you can put on the babies, and they show up on your phone. It's a, you know, surveillance camera on your baby. And she had that. And she was watching him cry on the way to the audition.
Through the phone, yeah.
Yeah, now she's turned around in the car while she's driving like a maniac after she's done Lord knows what. But, yeah, she runs into this construction dumpster, and it almost knocks her out, right? I mean, it's a bad thing. It does for a second. She's terrified. She comes to almost immediately, and she's terrified. She gets out of the car. Of course, Eddie's not making any noise now. And when she does, that was a rough one to watch. And she gets out. She goes back to the door. She can't even hardly bring herself to open the car door. And she does, but he's fine.
Well, I think the car door is crunched in because of the accident.
No, I'm talking about when she walks around the car to him. She stands there, and it's like, yeah.
What's left of Eddie?
Right.
Eddie Soup.
And I didn't know if he was going to be dead. I didn't know if they were going to show us a dead baby right there.
Yeah, that plus what's, you know, police pull up, and now Sierra's in a drunk driving situation with court and Eddie taken away and all this stuff.
Yeah, and she's holding him, and she's got like this frantic look on her face with her face all battered from the accident. And that's how we end part one, Sierra.
I don't know if that was because of drugs in her system, but I think it was because, and maybe it still will come back to haunt her if they find that. I mean, her car is stuck to the side of this construction dumpster. They're going to somehow investigate that. And I don't know if cocaine leaves your system the next morning, but they're going to find it the next morning.
And yeah, I mean,
find the owner of it and just probably test her.
She's got to do something, right? I mean, what's she going to do? Call an Uber? What's she going to do?
She could walk home. I think she was at least in her neighborhood going around that block.
It was several, you know, I mean, yeah, I guess, but on those hills and roads and in the dark. And
oh, she wasn't going that fast, though. She was just going a couple feet.
Okay. Well, part two is Helen, okay? And it was too much. Helen's waking up with Sasha, and she's late. She needs to get to Carolina's, what they call
her? Yeah, continuity thing with Succession. Michelle Gray Matter Gretchen is Carolina. She was Gretchen in Breaking Bad. She's also in Succession.
Oh, really?
She was Elliot and Gretchen. She was the Gretchen of Elliot and Gretchen that Walt made them go give the money back to.
I knew Skyler. I had seen her somewhere, and I couldn't figure it out. I kept thinking she was the teacher from Scent of a Woman at the end. And my husband Mike was telling me, that is not her. That's not her. He was laughing at me. He's like, that is an old movie. She would be so much older. But
Gretchen Schwartz. She's Gray Matter Gretchen. I call her GMG simplify it. But yeah, Helen wakes up with the second, what time is it? But this time it's Sasha she's with, not Sierra walking in. What time is
it? Right. And he's complaining about how he has to redo stuff because of her ex-husband's subpar writing. So he's a little snarky there. He tries to fool around, but she gets up. She finds the pink bra in the fridge, and no time at all has passed. This party was last night, so no time has passed since.
Why is that bra in the fridge?
Well, he said he didn't know what else to do with it. He wanted to, I guess, get it. I don't know.
Well, that's stupid. So he puts it in the refrigerator. And then he throws it on the ground like, look, I don't really care about it. Mm, throws it on the ground. That'll show her. And then she's kind of impressed by that. I'm like, come on, man.
Poor Erica is still, like, probably hiding in his bushes outside, right? Because she doesn't have a top.
Maybe.
But Helen apologizes for Noah. And they kiss, and he says he loves her. I don't know if this is the first time, but this is the first time that they're showing us, anyway.
Yeah, we get the I love you from Sasha versus the Noah I love you pretty soon to come up later.
Yeah.
And Helen considers them both. I think it's pretty interesting, actually, how she considers Noah's I love you.
Yeah, that's going to be a... I want to talk about that when we get there, because that's interesting. Okay, so Helen is at Carolina's house, and she is super excited. She loves what Helen's done. She offers Helen champagne, which, of course, we know Helen's not going to refuse. It doesn't matter if it's 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. Helen's saying she has no friends. It's a tough city. Carolina's husband, Barry, hasn't had a hit in 2 decades. And now that Sasha has agreed to work with him, everything's turning around in their lives. It's a big, big deal for them. And she's so grateful to Sasha.
Yeah, GMG's throwing money around pretty loosely here, Michelle, for somebody counting on money to come in. And if it doesn't come in, she's in such dire straits. She's throwing money around pretty loosely to get her house decorated and drinking champagne in the morning and, you know, all the stuff that she's spending money on art and crap. They don't add up. That not only does the time not add up in this show, the details surrounding people's financial situation doesn't really add up. Because, right, don't they make it look like GMG, if they don't get this movie deal with Sasha, they're almost ruined and they have to, like, change their lives and... Not like, oh, well, we missed out on that one. We'll get another movie deal in the next 6 months.
Well, I think they did make part of it obvious that they're going to have... She even said that she was going to take the girls and go back home. How old is she supposed to be? I mean, what does take the girls and go back home mean? She obviously does not have 9-year-olds, right? I mean, her husband's, this is his 60th birthday party. So that's another weird timeline thing. Unless, I don't know. I don't know. But,
GMG, she's worried that she's worried about the stupidest stuff for being on the fringe of financial disaster. Like, what are you going to wear to your debut of being Sasha Mann's girlfriend? Why is she worried about, why is she even thinking about that?
Well, I just felt like she probably was used to a lifestyle.
Well,
and then
clearly.
It dwindled over the course of time. And now she has it back again. You know, it's like, I've got a check coming in the mail. You know, you win the lottery, you may not get the check for 6 months, but people spend the money ahead of time, or at least start to spend it. So that's just kind of how I looked at that.
And I'm seeing her lifestyle never having changed. She's like, I've got this expensive gown that you can borrow, and I've got this mansion I live in, and I'm redecorating it, and I'm having this huge party. And what's ever changed since her opulent lifestyle from 20 years ago when the guy was making movies?
Yeah, well,
nothing changed. She's living it all continuously.
Right, but she was afraid it was going to have to change, is what she said. She was afraid they were going to have to sell the house and that kind of thing because of it. But I don't know. But then she talks about that the whole scene is like her gratitude towards Sasha. And she talks about when people go through self-doubt and that's when they need somebody to believe in them. And that's when people typically don't. And I thought that was a pretty profound thing, because in life, I think that can be viewed as true, whether it's actual or not. I think a lot of times when you're down on your luck and you need somebody to believe in you, that's a lot of times where people tend to not. And maybe that's just because we aren't portraying the confidence that we once had. And so other people don't feel as confident in us. Or maybe it's something deeper than that. Or maybe I'm just projecting too much of my own life into this story. So who knows?
Maybe. Or maybe when you find you need somebody to believe in you, maybe the opposite happens. Like you find yourself taking chances that you were afraid to take before. I don't know. I don't know what kind of message Sarah Treen's trying to deliver. But
that is a great take on it, though. I love that. Yeah. Maybe that's the time that you learn to believe in yourself. That's interesting.
When you venture into some change that you were always afraid or, you know, it's inconvenient to change. I'm just going to stay the same. But you have to change because if you don't, things are there's nothing else you can do except change. And that's when things get better.
Right.
I think usually they get better than worse. But
hopefully. But this is where Carolina offers her clothes, and she has like a vintage Halston jumpsuit she wants her to wear, and it's going to be the debut as Sasha Mann's girlfriend, like you said. And about this time, Noah pulls up. Wild-eyed Noah, right? Helen walks outside. She wants to know what he's doing here, and he wants to talk to her about last night. Now, she is like, stop. And he won't. He doesn't care that she doesn't. I mean, it's funny. She's like, first of all, she's all self-confident. She's like, I'm not doing this here. I'm working. And then she like turns into Helen with Noah, right? And she's like, please don't do this. Don't ruin this for me. Don't do this. In place of the confident, stop, you're not doing this right now.
Well, she's in Sasha mode. She's in her temporary, I'll do what Sasha thinks I should do, is put my foot down, draw my boundaries, and be confident about how I protect my time and don't give it all away to people. And yeah, I think she's Helen. She's not Sasha. She's not Sasha Helen. She's Helen Helen. So I'm glad she, I don't know, I'm kind of glad that she's getting away from Sasha.
Yeah, she kind of waffles back and forth between the two. And certainly the Helen Helen looks better on her, in my view, than the Sasha Helen. But Mike, would Noah do this? Who would do that? Who would
do
that?
Well, we just talked about it. He, whatever he's been doing hasn't worked, and he may be processing and changing and trying something. I mean, I don't like the view of Noah in the stupid untucked T-shirt or sweatshirt or wherever, whatever. He hasn't showered in a couple days, and his hair's messed up, and it's stupid to make him. He could look unkempt in a button-down. Does he always dress like this now when he wanders around like a burglar in neighborhoods? Why that look? Why that over-the-top look? But yeah, I could see Noah finally getting to the brass tacks of it and saying to himself, look, I got to just tell this woman I still love her and take one final shot. And it's interesting because when she rejects it in Sasha mode, she rejects Noah, he bows out with grace. He doesn't slink away in shame. He says, okay, I'm sorry, and kind of bows out gracefully. This Noah interaction was interesting, I think.
I thought it was, too. I thought it was very interesting, but I'm very conflicted about it, okay? Because I completely agree that was bound to happen, what happened. But why would he do it there? What kind of reaction do you think you're going to get if you go to somebody's job when they're in the middle of doing something and interrupt them? I mean, you know, this is not an officer and a gentleman. He's not going to sweep her off her feet and walk out, right?
Well, they're making a point of her crossing this boundary of the debut as Sasha Mann's girlfriend or man's girlfriend. So maybe there is a point in Noah's mind of like once she crosses over into this party as his announcing as his girlfriend or being seen as his girlfriend, that it'll be too late for me to make my stance.
Yeah, so. But how stalkerish? You know, I was calling you. You didn't answer. Okay, well, you just saw me, you know, what? 10 hours ago as you were trying to sabotage my relationship with my boyfriend and you know, how many times could you have possibly called me that I didn't answer and give her time to, at I don't know.
I think, you know, I don't know if you changed your mind about it, Michelle. I put actually in my notes that I know you don't fall for this, but I think it's the intent of the story is that Noah's message is starting to carry meaning for Helen. Like, he's desperate. He tries to plant the underwear and the sex toys and stupid. He does stupid things. He realizes he's over the top on that. And the next, as soon as he can, the next chance he gets is he just goes up to her and does what he should have done instead of the stupid things at the party. He should have just found a way to tell her what his true feelings are.
I completely agree with that. And it's past time. And I was waiting for this. Okay, we have waited for this. We have, you know, some of us have wanted him to feel some regret over the pain that he has caused this woman over the course of time, and to realize what he had with her that he just threw away for something that didn't work out anyway. It's a painful thing, and it's, you know, we actually have some friends that a similar thing happened to. They were different people in the relation, you know, different than Noah and Helen in this, but I'm not going to talk about it a lot, but it's just devastating to see people who've made these life decisions and disrupted all these other people's lives and the ripple effect that it has and had over the course of years and over the course of children and how it altered so many people's lives because of this, and then it didn't work out.
Well, you know, Michelle, if you read that Sarah Treem interview, that's literally almost exactly what she says, that her concept for the affair with Haggai Levy when they came up with it was, you throw a pebble in the center of a pond, that's the affair, and the ripples go way, way out for a long time afterward and long distance to touch a lot of people.
So is it going to be Noah's fault that Montauk's underwater? Global warming? Is that how long these ripples go?
That's funny.
I'm just wondering. But anyway, he does. He says all the things that we have, you know, kind of waited for. And I was frustrated with Helen's response, and I loved Helen's response at the same time. Because he's like, I love you. And she's like, what do you want me to do with that?
Well,
you
know? I think it registered with her. Her look revealed that it registered. Her struggle to not know what to say immediately, because she doesn't immediately laugh it off and dismiss him. Like, dude, you're freaking ridiculous. She thinks about it for it's just a couple seconds, but it registers with her.
It does. But Noah, I mean, I literally, me and my daughter that watched this together, we both at the same time laughed out loud when he said, I know I've made some mistakes. I mean, made some mistakes? Why would you even say that? I mean, yeah, obviously, but good grief. It's like, I know I've made some mistakes, but what if we got it wrong? You know, he didn't say, but I got it wrong. I was wrong. He's like, what if we got it wrong and we're meant to be together? Well, dumbass, you know, that's what I was saying for the first 6 years after you left.
Michelle, I don't like that you turn your daughters against Noah.
She laughed at the same time I laughed, so.
She has to. She's your daughter.
But he's saying he deserved a second chance. And she's like, you've gotten a second chance. You've gotten a second chance over and over and over again. And all you do is screw it up. And that I'd be an idiot to go back there. And then she says, well, first of all, he laughs at her relationship, scoffs at her relationship with Sasha. He says, you're not in love with Sasha. You're in love with me. Sasha's playing me right now.
That's true.
It is true. It's so true. And she's like, well, he's you, but he's better. And that's kind of true, too. So it's this real interesting exchange. But the stuff she says at him at the end was so telling. She says, I don't love you anymore. I don't want your love. It terrifies me, and it has caused me nothing but pain. And I just thought that was
but if
great.
You don't love somebody anymore, you say, look, I don't love you anymore. It just doesn't mean anything to me anymore. Not, it terrifies me. If it terrifies and causes pain, it's still powerful.
Yes, I completely agree. I completely agree. She was still affected by that. And the fact that she was affected says a whole lot more than the words she said. So that was a great scene. That was a great little 3-4 minute scene. So Helen goes into her house and Sierra's there because she ran out of coffee. So she's just like, you know, Helen doesn't lock her doors and she's just in there. She wants Helen to watch Eddie tonight because, but Helen has a party. And then Sierra does this, but you promised Vic you'd help me take care of him. Please, please, please. Like she's five, right? Yeah. And she doesn't say, I've got an audition or anything. She's like, I'm exhausted. I need a break. When do I get a break? And then Helen's like, about 18 years. And then she wants to take Helen's, what, THC vape pen or whatever that is. And Helen won't let her. She's like, how about you not smoke pot in front of the baby? Sierra goes out and Priya comes in, bringing the great gift of a white morning sari to her. Helen thanks her, but she's put off by it. In the meanwhile, Sasha calls her. And so he told her he loved her this morning, right? Evidently for the first time because she didn't say anything back to him. But now they're saying it before they even say goodbye on the phone. And she's forced to say it in front of Priya, which was disrespectful, right? I thought.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing with Priya, it's more passive aggressiveness. Priya comes over with this inappropriate gift, Michelle. It's a punishment to Helen. You should be in mourning, not out celebrating with a new boyfriend. How shame on you. You shouldn't have a new boyfriend 4 months after my son died. You should be in mourning. Here's
a gift. We said the same thing. But the gift, though, when we find out what she actually came over for, would have been necessary.
Yeah, so Michelle, I got to ask you, like, the babysitting question. What would you have done had Priya asked you to fake mama this baby?
Well, I have 20/20 insight into it now because I saw the end of it. However, I really struggled with that, and I probably shouldn't. I think I know what you will say, but I would have probably taken the baby. At least taken a little bit of time and taken that baby over there.
I think I probably would have too. I would have
pretended.
I think so.
You would have done that to.
I would have portrayed the lie to help Priya satisfy her relationship with her brother.
Wow. Okay, good. I think I would have had to have done that. I think I would have had to. But anyway, Helen leaves, and she admits to Priya that she has a boyfriend. And, of course, this upsets Priya, who talks about you have to wear white for a year and mourn and all this kind of stuff. And it has been awfully quick. You and I even agreed to that. But Priya actually came to ask her a favor. Helen won't even listen. She gets in her car, tells her to let herself out. And then she pulls up at Sasha's and Christiana's there. And she's like calling Helen by name, and she says she's Sasha's daughter. When she lets her in, Sasha is almost ugly with Helen, saying, I've told you, can't just let strangers into my house. What's wrong with you, woman? We've talked about this. She had stolen art from him, but she claimed that it was her mother's art that he had given to her. Of course, she pawned it, he says. He keeps yelling at her how much, and she finally breaks down and says $25,000. He's like, okay, I got off easily. Yells a curse word after she leaves that startles Helen because she hasn't seen this side of him, and he needs a drink. What's going on with this daughter?
Well, they don't tell us, so Sarah Treem forces us to kind of take sides on this. It's a pretty interesting dilemma as a viewer of the show. If it was her mother's art and Sasha kept it, she kind of does have a right to take it back and pawn it and do whatever she wants with it. How did this mother die? She committed suicide?
Yeah, I think so.
Because of Sasha or because of what? Why the suicide?
Well, did she commit suicide or did she OD? I'm trying to remember.
I don't know.
Yeah, she committed suicide, I think he said, in her car. Or she OD, I can't remember, in her car, in their car. I remember that part. So I don't know. But there was no mention of a daughter back then. And they had been together, I think Sasha said, since high school. Which, Sasha is how old?
I don't know.
Is that going to be a time thing, too?
I don't know. But Sasha giving her that money betrays... Sasha doesn't just say, get the... Sasha in Sasha mode would say, get the hell out of here. I'm not giving you anything. You're totally wrong. You're stalking me. You're trespassing. You're stealing. You're whatever crime. List all the crimes. But no, he gives her the money. That's pretty revealing that... She may be working him, but he's letting himself get worked to avoid some other thing from happening.
Well, he even says that she's extorting him. And to extort somebody, you have to have
some
cause,
yeah.
Right? So I didn't think they showed us the cause. I think something else is going to come out of that, don't you?
I don't think anything else has to. I think Helen sees enough cracks in Sasha's facade. Like, needing the drink immediately after. What the hell is that? I need a drink before I can even take another breath at 10 in the morning.
And the way he looks at her, too. He's I don't know. Okay, so Sasha says that she does this about every 6 months once she's gone. She doesn't need a place to stay. He had her followed by his security detail. Why?
Yeah, there's more to it than just on the surface.
And she's not been in rehab. She's been in Bali. And then he goes into this poor me, right? He's a victim. People get close to him, and then they use him. And then they kiss, and this is when Priya calls. And Helen has realized she had forgotten to call Priya back on her way over to Sasha's. And I also thought before that Sasha lived like a long way from her. Remember, he sent a car for her, and he lives like, I don't know. Now they're just acting like it's down the road. But she explains that her brother had a 24-hour layover and she wants him to meet Helen and Eddie, and that the family's very conservative and she doesn't want the family to realize, to judge Vic by this mistake he made. And she asks Sasha what she should do, and he tells her to set boundaries. So she's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And Priya's like begging her, and she's like, no, and please respect that, and hangs up on her. So,
yeah, we see a couple slashes in Sasha's armor really in quick succession here. The whole thing with the daughter of the fiancé, the bribe money, the drinking right after it, then the feels good, huh, to hang up on Priya. Like, he's different than Helen has interpreted him up to this point.
Right.
In like a... maybe less than 5 minute span, 2 minutes, all these things happen that are revealed to Helen about Sasha.
Well, and then he doesn't even hesitate. He's like, felt good, didn't it? And Helen's standing there like, no, it didn't feel good. How can it feel good to hurt somebody?
And power, exerting power.
I mean, sometimes you have to tell people no, obviously, in life, but in a situation particularly like that, I don't see how I could feel good. Anyway, so Helen's in the white one-shouldered Halston jumpsuit from Carolina, and Sasha gets a call. And Eden, of all people, Eden comes up. She was a... What'd you think about her showing up in this?
It's just the flame Noah more, gush over Sasha more. It's like, Noah sucks, Sasha's great. Noah sucks, Sasha's great. Everybody thinks that.
Right.
Eden puts a stamp on that to further accent it. I don't know. It was a little unnecessary, I thought.
Okay, we'll get there in just a second. But Noah, Eden is so impressed that Helen is now dating Sasha. You're right. She's like gushing over him. It's ridiculous. Noah's a creep. They both agree on. And she's sucking up to Sasha, and she has her own firm now. If he wants to make they represent talent. If he wants to make a change, give her a call. And she wants to get a drink with Helen sometimes. And then as she walks away, Helen tells Sasha that she thinks Noah slept with Eden. And he's like, oh, really? When? And he's like looking over at her, which completely proves that Noah is right. He's with Helen to get into character. Because he was like, oh, so he slept with her too during part of this? At what point should I be doing this?
That can find out stuff like this via the fiance's daughter. So, yeah, I mean, maybe the timing of Eden is important because after all this bad things happen about Sasha, another woman comes up and gleefully meeting Sasha like, oh, he's so wonderful. So you're so much better than Noah. But now Helen knows better that, well, you don't know these cracks that are in Sasha's perfect facade. This truly is a facade because other people see him this way, too.
Well, then he gets a phone call and he walks off again and Carolina comes up and again it's the whole story about how they almost lost everything and now Sasha has agreed to do this and everything in their life has turned around and oh, look at Barry over there and Barry, you know, stops what he's doing and waves to her. He's so happy now and Sasha comes back and the Maze 3 is a go. They start production in Chad in a week, which I didn't even know they were done with Descent. And Carolina's like, but what about Barry's movie? And he's like, I mean, immediately, he's like, oh, yeah, I had agreed to do that, right? Yeah, I can't do both. And she's like, well, we can push it. She's begging him. And he says, no, I can't do it. I'm sorry, I can't do it. My boundaries. I'm going to go tell Barry. And she's like, no. This is going to be devastating to them.
Well, and it's not just Barry. I mean, there's what about all the contracts and lawyers and investors in the movie and the salaries of the staff that are getting ready for the movie and site planners and agreements and promotional people. And he's just bowing out of a big – every movie is a corporation. Every time there's a movie made, they make a corporation. And not just like one guy who wrote it and one guy who's going to act in it get their lives changed. It's like – jobs of a bunch of other people.
That's interesting. I did not think about all that, but absolutely. You know a lot about that, Mike.
Well, you know, my time here at West Coast Project, Michelle.
that was very, very telling. He gets another one of those, he gives Helen another one of those like quick smiles, you know? You know those smiles people do? You look at somebody and you kind of raise your eyebrows and halfway smile and walk away. It was very disconcerting the way he was. So then they're in the car on the way home, and Helen, she doesn't like it. He's like, your house or mine, baby? And she's like, I'm going to mine, and you're going to. And he's like, oh, don't be like that. And then he goes into this whole thing. Okay, he says, Carolina is not your friend. She was doing me a favor by hiring you, which is demeaning to her and what she does, even if it's true. And it's also even more telling. It's like, okay, I told this guy I was going to do his movie. I got them to hire you. They did me a favor, and now I'm crapping out on them. So it's even worse.
And it betrays, it's demeaning to Helen that, like, you can't even choose friends accurately. Your perception of who's a friend is inaccurate. You don't know people.
Well, and that combined with that whole, like, kind of abuser status of you don't need her as a friend, you have me.
Right.
That whole, you don't need anybody else, you have me. I mean, what a creep. Okay, so Helen walks into the house and Stacy's the one asleep on the couch with Eddie. She goes to wake her up, but Priya comes to the door looking worse for wear. And Helen is back to Helen now. She's apologizing, and Priya goes into this whole thing about how her brother and herself haven't spoken for decades because she married a Muslim, and when Vic died, that the family disowned her, they didn't come to her wedding, they never knew Vikram, and when he died, her brother phoned her, and then miracle of miracles, he ended up in a 24-hour layover in L.A., and she just didn't want Vic's memory sullied. Excuse me, by the mistake that he made with Sierra. And then she says that she had Vic fooled, and she has everyone fooled. And when, by the way, white is your color.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter what Priya thinks, because Priya's wrong for asking Helen to do this, and she's wrong to chastise her for not doing it. But it's the edges of the boundaries, the envelope, right? One on one edge is Priya. You should have done this. It would have helped me a lot. It would have saved my relationship with my brother. You're a bad person for not doing it. And on the other end of the envelope, Sasha, don't do anything for anyone. Do everything for yourself. And you don't need anyone. You just need me. Just be selfish and only give me things. It's and somewhere in the middle is Helen, right? And I think these two edges of ridiculousness give Helen the bearings to maybe figure out again where she should be. I mean, hopefully that does, because the interesting thing is, what does the sensible Helen do with the sensible Noah, if anything? That's how this has to all resolve itself.
There's a sensible Noah? I haven't found him. I haven't seen him. Even by his own standards, I have not seen a sensible Noah.
You don't think the centrifuge is pulling Noah a little bit back closer to the middle? That his, you don't think he realized that the stupid-ass mistake of the bedroom, stashing the stuff in the bedroom?
That's not even the mistake. That's not even it. The mistake is the affair. The mistake is the lies. The mistake is
He did all that, and now he's dealing with it. So you don't see him as coming back towards some sort of a center by saying, Helen, I made all these mistakes, and I still love you, and I want you to know that I love you. And then she doesn't really accept it, and he kind of gracefully says, okay, I guess I have to live with that, but at least I said to you what I think was important enough to find a way to say it. And I said it wrong in a million other ways first. That is a given. He's an idiot for doing all that. But he's at least finding some sort of a better way to tell her that he still loves her. I got to give him credit for that. I think he's coming back to more of a sensible center than he's been in a long time. And this craziness that Helen's going through with Priya and Sasha and all this other bullshit, she's finding her center. And I think these two people, from sensible ground, what they do with each other is all that this story has left to tell.
I've got to tell you that if I'm being completely emotionally vulnerable and honest with you, that I want to believe Noah. I want him to make this right, but much like Helen, Noah's love has caused me nothing but pain, and I would be an idiot to go back there again.
Noah's love has caused you, Michelle from TN, nothing but pain?
Nothing but pain.
Michelle, it's a TV show.
Nothing but pain. I am so pained by him.
Well, that's a whole other psychological problem.
Noah, I don't know. You know, right now I'm going to tell you I don't love you anymore.
That's all the story is left to tell, though, right? You can't keep coming up with Sierras and Vicks and Sashas and everything else. The story is between Helen and Noah. What is left between them? And they have to purify. They've defined where they are now. They've gone through all this turmoil and stress and struggle and testing and failures of testing and all that. And now they're left with what they have. So I think the resolution has to be, I have love for you. They can't be together.
I think they're gonna.
Well, all right.
I think they're gonna. And yeah, I think you're right. Now we know, the very last season, we know that this is the story of Noah and Helen. But they had us like fooled for a long time, right? That maybe it was also the story of Allison and Cole. I mean, Allison was a huge character in this. Cole was a little bit less. But so much so that we learned about Cole's family and about Cherry and about Cole's father and about Cole's walkabout and about Cole's brother who got married and they had a miscarriage and so many details. And now it's like, okay, none of that's important except for the fact that there's Joni out of time.
Well, there wasn't a grand plan that Sarah Treem had that she's revealing it all, unraveling and unrolling it for us all to see. It's, you know, she had real life things affect her ability to tell her. Her story changed as she went through this production of this show. You know, Ruth Wilson wanted out, and then Cole wanted out, and she had to deal with that. And, you know, she's got Noah and Helen left, and she's got five more episodes to tell it. I think she's probably going to try to pull some resolution between them together, but I don't see them together as a couple. I think them together as an ex-couple that understand their space between each other.
See, I think she still loves him. Helen does. And I think Noah, you know, still loves her. I don't think he loves her because he sees Sasha with her. I think he loves her because he has maybe come full circle, like they talked about. You know, have you come full circle, Noah? And maybe he has.
Well, you can still you can love and still love someone and not be in a relationship with them, because you have, because you can love someone and not be able to live with them.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. But you are in a relationship with people that you love if you have contact with them. It may not be a living together as husband and wife relationship, but I think it's a relationship.
Well, I think that's what we're going to get with them.
Okay.
Not that they're cohabitating, you know, not that they're living together as a couple, but they reach a common ground. And hopefully not in snow globe conditions because of the time being all off.
We'll see. I don't know. It looked like on the next ones, did you see them?
I think so. I can't remember, though, what
happened. It was all about Joni. Nothing except Joni. It looks like it might all be about Joni next time. They showed nothing else. We have some flashbacks to Allison and little girl Joni, and Joni saying that she was the replacement child, which is so ridiculous. She was an accident. You don't replace anyway. And maybe that explains why she threw out Gabriel's trunk last time. She's kissing some other man that I could not figure out, but I swear I think it might have been an aged Ben.
Ben would be pretty old in 38 years. 2058?
Well, it's not 38 years, though, because she was 7, so it's 30 years, and Ben was what? He was only like 40. I guess he still would be old. I don't know, or older. Yeah, I don't know, but that's who it looked like. But who knows? Maybe he's 47 in this. Who knows?
Time travel.
Seriously. But her husband is saying everything's changed. I assume it's her husband, the guy she's with at the beginning. And then Joni is asking someone if they're sure it was a suicide. So that's all. That's all they showed on the upcoming is Joni.
All right, Michelle, we're both older after this podcast. So we'll see you next week on 506 and find out what happens.
We'll see you then, Mike.
Bye.
Bye-bye. See you then.